Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Sesternino back here for our Amazing Race 34 recap, episode number 6, as we saw the back half of our leg in Jordan, and not without incident, as Abby and Will are out on the Amazing Race after a positive COVID test. Here with us to talk about everything that's going on at this hour, of course, our chief Amazing Race correspondent, Jessica Leese. Jess, how are you?
Little bummed, Rob. You know, this is never how you want to see a team go out. But, you know, it was still good location on the leg. I think we're going to have a fun recap.
Yeah. And this is a first for the Amazing Race, right? Even in everything with the Amazing Race coming back in season 33, that at a earlier point in time, I don't think anybody tested positive in COVID for COVID in that season. But here we have our first U.S. Positive COVID case. And we see how it hands handled. And of course, a man who is always positive. It's Mike Bloom. Mike, how are you?
So were Abby and Will throughout the rest of the race, right? They were positive for the first four legs and they were positive in a very different way. I am positively excited to be here, Rob. I have my repurposed Halloween costume as well after watching the sort of practice garb that they got to wear. And they're covering up me honoring my two favorite podcasters as we were in Amman, Jordan today.
So. Yeah. Wow.
It's some of your best work, Mike.
Thank you.
Well done, Mike. So yeah, you beat me to the punch because I was going to say that this leg here this week might have been the biggest waste of everybody's time in a Jordan-centric way since this week in Survivor history.
Oh my God.
Ouch.
There's no math involved, just letters this time around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, in all seriousness, you know, not for anything, and I know we have like extenuating circumstances, but wasn't this billed as the season with no non-elimination legs whatsoever? That there's no fooling around here.
I mean, technically, it's more so billed as like no second chances, and Abby and Will did not get a second chance, so I suppose they are still fulfilling that thing.
About that, Mike. Yes. So this was billed as the theme of, okay, Amazing Race 34. We're doing it for real. There's no second chances. Also, Phil.
Here's the thing about the Amazing Race. Even if you arrive last on one leg, that doesn't mean you can't arrive first on the next.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it does mean, though. That is literally what that means.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe Phil was just programmed to, you know, have these mantras in his head from seasons 1 through 33 that he didn't necessarily get the season 34 update. Yeah, it's odd that, again, like you said, extenuating circumstances, but it is weird that now 2 episodes out of 6, we have basically started the episode knowing that there would not be an elimination at the end, which feels very different than like a bunch of other seasons where there have been non-elimination. Like,
now, hold on a second, Mike. Don't try to tell me that there were not stakes for this hour of television, because that Phil tells us right up front, okay, the team that comes in last, they are going to be leaving 45 minutes after the first team in the next leg. And I'm like, whoa, okay. A little bit of a stiff penalty, but okay. Right, Jess? I mean, 45 minutes after the first team?
Well, I think they are kind of overselling this, because it's not 45 minutes behind. It is 15 minutes behind the team in front of you. I still don't love this, and I don't love like singling out the team that's in the back.
Yeah.
But I don't know. My question to you is, would this be better if you let the first place team leave 15 minutes ahead and then like bunched everybody else?
That's interesting in terms of an advantage. But at first I'm like, oh wow, 45 minutes behind the, like, and then they said it again as like, oh wait, it's not 45 minutes behind the group that's ahead of them. That if the first group leaves, then 15 minutes later somebody else leaves, and 15 minutes later somebody else leaves, and only 15 minutes behind. Like,
I will say 15 minutes in the current Amazing Race structure is a hell of a lot of time. It feels like a death sentence to me. Like, I feel really afraid for our favorites, Glenda and Lumumba, because this really, the way that they're running legs these days, 15 minutes is a lot of ground to make up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like a quarter of a leg. But I mean, look at so far as even less of a time thing.
The race is in real time now. It's 24.
Yeah, exactly. Look at more of a positional thing. Like, look at last leg, right, when we had the metal detector roadblock and how the back of the pack teams were screwed. And Derek and Claire were able to do the impossible and catch up because there were so few things left. If there are more tasks like that, then yeah, it really does suck to finish in the back of the pack. And that is both good and bad. Like, it's nice on paper, I think, to incentivize the teams that are doing better to not make it seem like, okay, it's just a crapshoot every time. On the other hand, I loved the equalized start at the beginning here because I felt like for the first time in a while, it truly felt like, okay, anything can happen, as opposed to like, all right, what placement are Marcus and Michael going to be in the top three this week? Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, when we equalize things, they end up falling to the bottom three.
It is just sort of like unfathomable to remember that you used to, like, when you checked in, then you would depart like 12 hours after when you checked in. Like, for Glenda and Lumumba, like, they picked up so much time to only be 15 minutes behind the rest of the pack to start off the next leg.
That's a fair point. Although, I don't know. You always ask teams when they get eliminated, like, how far back were you? And they always say, oh, we don't think we were more than a few minutes. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that a team is like, oh, yeah, we were about 2 hours behind.
Forget
the other
it.
Teams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And not to mention that this is almost like serving as the placeholder of what we occasionally see of, okay, rip it and read it. Let's start the next leg. Okay, head to this bus station and sign up for one of three buses, coming 15 minutes apart from each other. So it's almost like doing that spacing out when the leg starts. But yeah, I mean, again, listen, I do not begrudge the show whatsoever because they were put in an impossible situation of like, okay, do we eliminate right. two teams? We have all these pit stops planned. And instead them trying to essentially put lipstick on a pig and be like, you get to leave 45 minutes after the other teams. And to Jess's point, I think there are some stakes involved. It's just, it's a little womp womp. And especially, I think, just for the entire leg, right? Like, knowing automatically a team wasn't going to go home and this is what they were racing for. There was still excitement to watch, I think, because, again, this cast has really buoyed my so-so-iness about the team, the task themselves. But I sort of think when they kept coming back to, we got to make sure we're not in last, so we don't finish the length of an episode of The Amazing Race after the other teams. Mm-hmm. That sort of removes, I think, a bit of the heightened drama of it all.
So, Mike, I think I agree with you. I think it would have been better if they just let them think they were going to eliminate another team at the end of the leg and then surprised them. But then they're like going back on their word that there are no non-elimination legs, when it's very clear now that the reason there are no non-elimination legs was so they could put impromptu non-elimination legs down whenever somebody tested positive for COVID.
That's interesting, Rob. Is it like the equivalent of when Survivor said no more 16-person cast because they want to account for if there are quits and medevacs? You want a little bit of, for lack of a better term, wiggle room when it comes to these things?
Boy, I think that it's probably, if I had to guess, that I think that on paper they said, oh, okay, yeah, we're having 12 teams and we're going to, you know, not have any like scheduled non-elimination legs. And then I think they had to deal with circumstances. I mean, they got through all of Amazing Race 33 without any, positive. Well, I guess they did have to shut down the race for 2 years. But other than that, no major interruptions from COVID.
How was the play, Mrs. Lincoln? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, once they got back going, everybody was good. And so, you know, but I guess they sort of like dodge a total disaster. I mean, they're all like flying together, like on the planes. And so the teams are around each other. So to only have one team test positive, I mean, certainly could have been a much worse situation for the show.
Could have been an Amazing Race Australia situation where 5 out of 11 teams drop out due to COVID. Although in that case, they just let them quarantine and let them come back when they mm-hmm. were ready. Mm-hmm. But that definitely, in that tiny enclosed metal tube of the airplane, they yeah. all could have had COVID. So they're very lucky.
And so Abby and Will, they are eliminated from first time we've seen a FaceTime elimination here on The Amazing Race. We do have an exit interview coming up with them. That is going to be at the end of this podcast. So be on the lookout for that. Following this recap, we had the chance to speak with them this morning. And Jess, that you were, maybe we didn't see as much of their personalities on the show. Like, you definitely understand, like, why The Amazing Race was excited to have Abby and Will.
Yeah, their enthusiasm for it is contagious. Mm. They were just so fun
Don't
to
say
talk
contagious.
To. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I didn't even, that wasn't even intentional. If Mike had said it, it would have been intentional.
No, they were certainly a carrier of fun, as it were. I really love, I got the chance to speak with them as well. Their positivity, again, I will stop using that word, but like, it's so prevalent. They're just like smiling from ear to ear, even when they're talking about the worst things. I also talked with them about their own reaction to their edit. I mean, how do we look back on this? Do we think ultimately it was sort of like a tail wagging the dog because they got COVID, they got a quiet edit? They had sort of surmised to me that maybe it was because they were finishing very middle of the pack. And from an edit perspective, that's like the danger zone of Amazing Race, because they don't really care about teams that finish in the middle of the pack. They want teams in the hunt for first place and last place. Because again, I think that there was a lot of energy behind them and we could have definitely seen more. It's just for whatever reason, they were by far the purplest team this season.
Yeah.
I think it had to be a Purple Kelly situation where it's like they know that ultimately this team is not going to matter that much. So it's a little bit of a raw deal for them, honestly, because it wasn't their fault they got COVID that we know of. Mm-hmm. I didn't ask.
Yeah. Okay. I also think that, you know, if they're not involved with a lot of drama, you know, if they're not really having struggles along the way, you know, it's hard to, you know, really like, you know, highlight them in a more meaningful way, especially when they're not at the top or all the way at the back.
Yeah, but I'm grateful that they got the chance to not only go onto the race, but also talk with us as well. Almost like Asta and Nina, right? Like, get these opportunities to look at these teams that are probably less popping on the spotlight to be like, okay, I can understand why you ended up getting cast on this show. So it was a very fun conversation. I'm sure you all had a great one as well.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about this leg through Jordan. Definitely a different feel than last week's leg, which was mostly like all set up in the desert. We got to see a lot more through the metropolitan areas here in Jordan. We had everybody head off to a route marker to go and find a bookstore.
Does exist?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Still, yep. Amazon have left a few, and they might be hard to find, as was the case for some of the teams.
Yeah. That's why, again, I like this sort of like everyone at once start, because it felt a little bit more chaotic. It was more comparable to the starting line, right? Of just like, some teams gathered together, some separated, some followed other teams, but then separated off. I really enjoyed sort of like the controlled chaos that happened. And I totally agree with you. I really like the choice to, okay, if we are doing two legs in one country, which seems to be the structure now of COVID era Amazing Race, to make one leg distinctly different from the other one in terms of environment. I forget what this is comparable to. I know there was a season where they did like one leg in the city during the day and one leg in the city at night. I think that's like a really good example of that, of just small discrepancies to not make things feel samey. So I like the case of sort of city mouse, desert mouse. And in this case, it was really interesting to have them sort of like navigate in a very different way. Whereas last time they didn't really have to navigate at all. They were driven. This time was all about like having to make your way through all these little streets, and surprise, surprise, a bunch of teams got lost along the way.
You know, Jess, this is like kind of interesting that Phil sort of sets up like, okay, in the next leg, okay, we're going to have two pairs of racers leave first, two pairs of racers leave second, two pairs of racers leave third, and one pair is going to, or one set of racers is going to have to leave all by themselves. And then I kind of feel like that the Amazing Racers sort of like self-selected into, okay, let's pair off and then let's leave ultimately the team that is going to come in last for themselves.
Yeah, it's kind of like you got to pick your project partner for the class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody went on double dates in this episode.
And then Glendon Lumumba got stuck working with the teacher.
Mm-hmm. And they ultimately came in last. So we've been talking about Marcus and Michael with Emily and Molly. Mike, are they frenemies officially now?
I can't tell, because they ended up finding the bookstore together. Right, but then they also like end up checking in together. I don't think they work together once over the course of the lake. I think it's more so like Voldemort and Harry Potter. Like, I think their destinies are tied to each other because they're both sibling pairs, and they both pretty much finish, I think, with the exception of last leg, like within direct proximity of each other.
But I did feel like when they got to the detour, they like talked like, hey, what are you picking? What are you picking? Like, they weren't acting as if they are like going for, mutually assured destruction.
Yeah, but I feel like that was the only time maybe the two teams talked to each other the entire leg, right? Because like, otherwise, I don't know. I'm surprised there wasn't more collusion, like at the language detour, for example. They didn't help each other in the roadblock. They just happened to do that thing where you say goodbye to someone after you go to dinner with them, but you end up walking to the car in the same direction. So I was like, okay, what do we do now? Do we keep talking or do we let that end right there? That's what I feel like Marcus and Michael and Emily and Molly were doing this leg.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So after the bookstore, we then had to do letter by letter, or as the episode title tells us, step by step. Mike, were you a step by step guy?
I was so into Brady Bunch that I was like, that was a cheap knockoff mm-hmm. with Patrick Duffy.
Yeah. Jess, were you a bigger fan of the step by step by the New Kids on the Block?
I think I was more the demographic for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For sure. And of course, well-documented New Kids on the Block fan, you know, featuring, you know, Amazing Race 26 alum Jonathan Knight.
Was this a shout out? This was an Easter egg?
Maybe it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 8 seasons later, with Jordan Knight, if you're still watching, we love you. But mm-hmm. I believe he actually recently either got
and
married.
Where
or
were they, Mike? Where were they?
In Jordan.
Yeah, but it wasn't. Jordan was not the one who was on the show. It was Jonathan who was on the show.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe like me. Maybe they mixed it up.
Okay. Well, we're close. We're close. It was also during the day. So what are you going to do? All right. Letter by letter or step by step. They had to go through the Arabic alphabet or go and learn the dance.
Yes, with all
yet
of
another
the,
dancing task mm-hmm.
with the dozen of guys doing like the white guy step and clap routine over and over and over again. I really felt bad for them. At least they didn't have to like dance full out, but them just having to be like, while these people are just butchering mm-hmm. their native wedding dance in front of them.
Yep.
Not to mention they have to perform the same song over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's the thing that always jumps out at me when they have those dancing tasks is it's the same song and it's on repeat.
Mm-hmm. Standard Amazing Race fair for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt bad for Glenda and Lumumba, who I believe were the first team to arrive at step by step and like, we're doing great. We're the first team here. And everybody else that shows up are all professional dancers.
Yeah. They're spouses
of professional dancers.
Exactly. Which is like in proximity, right? You assume you get some sort of osmosis there. For what it's worth, I don't know, I might be misremembering. This might be, though, from like a visual perspective, one of the most aesthetically pleasing dances that I've seen in some time in The Amazing Race. Maybe just because of also like the full outness that you saw Louisa Michelle and Aubrey and David do it. But like, I really enjoyed watching this dance. I liked how the partners had different moves. I liked the beat behind it. I really enjoyed getting to watch it. Plus, except for Glenda and Lumumba, right? Like all these other teams got it in like 2 tries. So it wasn't like we were watching the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have a gripe about it, though, which is that they seem to be grading on attitude. And whenever you grade somebody on attitude, I feel like I kind of bristle against that because I'm a person that if I'm frustrated, you're going to know. I'm not going to be able to hide it. I could see myself like getting screwed up on that and like getting the dance exactly right. And they'd be like, but you weren't smiling enough, so you need to do it again.
You weren't in love. I wasn't feeling the chemistry. Didn't pass the chemistry test.
Yes. Okay. Well,
need to go back to the pods.
First off, nobody on The Amazing Race, it's very rude to tell a person that they need to be smiling more. And actually, I'm talking to you, Aubrey.
Phil, every time we see you, you have this unpleasant look on your face.
I have an unpleasant look?
Yeah. Rude. Rude.
Rude.
RBPF, resting bitch Phil face.
That's not inappropriate, Aubrey. Do not tell Phil he needs to smile more.
You can tell him to pop his eyebrow more.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell him to smile more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I love that. I'm loving more and more of Phil's like small interactions with at the pit stop. Outside of, you know, the little motivational speeches that he gives, like the bit of back and forth was very fun this time around with him. I mean, I'll be honest. That's probably the most interesting thing Aubrey and David have done so far mm-hmm. in 6 episodes of the show was call Phil out on having a resting bitch face at the pit stop.
Yeah, but not today. Not today. Normally, they said normally he's like that. So it's like a backhanded compliment.
He's trying to, are they negging him?
Maybe. Yeah. That does Phil, is this a thing that Phil does? Does Phil like, is he like give people like disappointed looks when they, yeah.
We've documented this.
He does.
Eighth place, really?
Yeah, he does the Key and Peele Hell's Kitchen sketch of, right, wow, well, you didn't do well today. It was a tough day for you, but it won't be your last day. You're moving on. Like, he purposely plays up the sad mask, so then the happy mask comes out. I think Aubrey's really hyperfixating on the former because, again, this is the second, twice now, they've come in second to last. So they've gotten that routine twice from him, and they're kind of sick of it.
Yeah. Okay. So, Mike, you felt like that the step-by-step was visually stimulating. How about letter by letter?
I mean, that provided, I think, more of the comedy behind it. In particular, some of these men's inability to get anything glottal happening. who knew? Derek X's one thing, every time he blew out a candle on his cake every birthday, was to wish that he could roll his R's.
Yeah, let's set that up, because Derek X tells us about how this is a lifelong struggle for him.
I cannot roll my R's. I've tried it every single year on my birthday. Growing up, I was like, today, this is the year that I'm going to roll my R's, literally. And of course, what do I have to do today? Roll an R. Yeah. And this is going to be my downfall.
First off, Derek X, are you okay?
Derek X should have gone to the Zoltar machine and made a wish of, I wish I could roll my R's.
Mm-hmm. This was his wish? This is like... Jess, I mean, talk. First off, either a couple things are going on here. Either A, something that we've commented on before, that Amazing Race is a sadistic show that finds out what your innermost fear is and then builds tasks around it. That's a possibility, correct?
Oh, yeah. I think it's a likelihood, but go on.
Mm-hmm. Or is it possible that Derek X, reality TV veteran, of three different shows in the span of one calendar year, has sort of cracked the code of, hey, you know how to get more screen time?
Oh,
that's so cynical.
Talk about,
I love it.
Whatever is happening has been some sort of like lifelong thing that you were trying to overcome.
That's interesting. So like Aubrey should have gone to the pit stop and like, Phil, you're always giving us this disapproving look. I have a fear of disapproving looks that I'm going to have to overcome. Every year in my bar mitzvah, I said, I hope no one gives me disapproving looks, and now you're doing it. And this is my hurdle to have to jump over to progress through the race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If the test was hurdles, you come at like, all my life I've wanted to get over hurdles. And now that I never was able to do it, it was my biggest fear was having to run the 400 meter hurdle. Now
it comes at the cost, though, of you coming across as a total dweeb like Derek X does.
But look, I found it inspiring. Like, it was a thing he never knew how to do. And then he very quickly learned how to do it in 20 minutes by concentrating on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't really think he learned how to do it. Yeah, he more so knew how to make some sort of monstrous sound come from the back of his throat and like cheat his way through it. I do not think if he makes it, if he won the trip to Barcelona, I do not think he's passing by with any sort of the typical Spanish language.
Mm-hmm. This is the year. This is the year I'm going to learn to roll my R's. Going to do it. Going to do it. And really, I mean, for Derek X, to have this come up here in this spot, I mean, it must have been such a terrible realization.
Do you think he... like had a bit of a flashback when he had to search the desert a la Star Wars because he hates Chewbacca so much? He just has so much hatred of the Wookiees for what they're able to do.
Yeah, unable to roll those R's for the former. Now I can't do it. The Lord of the Latrine.
But the best part of this by far is Claire. Again, I think Claire is like the perfect example of snark. That I love to see in a reality TV contestant, both in that clip, right, of her saying what, and then when they eventually do get it and he's going, oh, hurry, bud. She's like, okay, let's not, put the cart before the horse. We're going to
that'll come later.
Roadblock.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for next week when she's saying, you're doing a great job. And then she looks right at the camera, like gives it a Jim Halpert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, Claire during the challenges and the tasks. I love exasperated Claire. so very fun to watch. Like, I'm sure it's not fun for her.
Well, yeah, because I think the more exasperated Claire gets, again, the more sarcastic she gets, right? Of like, good for them. Wish it was me. Like, you can just feel the rage boiling underneath her every time she says something, especially during a roadblock when it's really all on her.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then we saw the teams after the detour then have to go and go work on this roadblock, which I kind of liked the name of this. Who's feeling broken carded?
Oh, my heart.
A plus.
And I would say I'll also give credit to the detour as well. Like, there was similar cadence to it, step by step versus letter by letter. It wasn't a rhyme, but it wasn't just two random idioms as the choice. So yeah. Now, this is interesting because we talk a lot. And one of the reasons why I think in the draft, we all pick a lot of the dancing teams high is, okay, we know there are dancing and music tasks on The Amazing Race. Does this season prove that now building skills should be incorporated in? Because this is now the second construction task that we have put on this season of the race.
I think you at least have to be familiar with building things on like an IKEA furniture level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which they said, it's not IKEA, though, this time around.
They said it's not, but it's close enough.
We did say that.
Now, and it was literally a task one time on The Amazing Race to put together IKEA furniture.
Jess, did we see anything like this in Amazing Race 33?
Did we? That's a good question.
Not that I can recall.
I cannot recall a building task in 33. Mike?
I don't think I can either, which is interesting. It just seems like for whatever reason. No, but you know what I remember? I remember them putting together the whiskey barrels. But I think that's about it. And that wasn't even like a building thing. I think that was more so like pure strength. This is more about like, can you wield tools? Now, granted, this might be because we have a freaking mechanic and apparently a lot of mechanically minded people on this season. But I'm just saying, future Amazing Racers, if the Abby and Wills of the world are watching, first off, I hope you're healthy. And B, maybe bone up on your toolkits, quite literally, before joining the race, because there's a non-zero chance that you might be asked to build something.
I mean, should we add this to like the JL rules list of things that you need to know how to do to go on the race? Drive a stick shift. You need to know how to swim. You need to like be able to put together a bookcase.
Yeah, go to a Home Depot on the weekend and take like one of their like tools 101.
Walk around with a bottle on your head.
Mm-hmm. Sure. All those things.
I'd take a dance class. Like, I think we've established pretty firmly now, you need to be able to do choreography.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Jess, one of the things that I thought kind of needed a rule distinction, and I feel like that we kind of just got it by context, where we saw that, okay, you had to build your cart, okay? The judge had to approve your cart. And then your cart was also, could fall apart on the way to fill. And I guess you had two options. Either you could fix the cart and get it back into a state of repair, or just carry all the pieces with you to fill. That shouldn't the cart have to stay together?
I think you should have to repair the cart if it falls apart. I think they were banking on carts falling apart because it's excellent TV to have people like pushing this thing along. And then all of a sudden it just sort of goes to pieces and they have like ball pit balls inside of the cart, which why? But it was a nice visual.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they were trying to, if they were of shorter stature, perhaps the Lumumbas of the world would be able to jump into the cart afterwards and splash around in the balls if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't trust any of those carts to stay together if a human got in them.
No,
that would look incredibly unvarnished. I'm sure there were many a splinter. Plus, like, those nails did not look of the best quality either.
Tough as nails.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing as well. Maybe there was a lost cart task that was meant for the Tough as Nails season that has yet to film. And they're like, oh, you know what? I think we could use it here. I think this is what matters. I mean, it seemed like there wasn't really any problems with putting it together. Like, Louise had one check where it didn't really work. I think the issue more so, which we'll talk about with like going team by team, is like how long you took doing it. And less so, unlike the Ducati, this is more the Ducati, if you will. I think therefore I build was like, do you spend a lot of time doing it, or do you just kind of shoddily get it done and risk it possibly falling apart, as it happened with Louisa Michelle, feet from where you finished the task?
Okay. let's talk about our teams in a little bit more in detail. Glenda and Lumumba, they end up being the last team to arrive. I feel like that they really like started off hot. And it's like the thing that we were kind of afraid of with like Derek X and Claire, of that they kept going backwards and they have not rebounded. Or how? What's our level of concern for Glenda and Lumumba?
It seems to me like maybe they just hit a couple of tasks that are not their wheelhouse. And I think sometimes you can get in the negative feedback loop about that. So I am really worried about them going into this next leg, especially being a full 15/45 minutes behind everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting trajectory, right? Where, so if you look at like the butterfly effect of it all, like they, starting the mega leg, had this thing where they misconstrued the instructions, tried to walk to a task when it wasn't there and put themselves in last. They made up time in the roadblocks to finish third to last, still remain in the back of the pack when, again, that last leg was more conducive to like keeping everyone kind of where they were due to the status of the roadblock. And then this leg, despite catching up, it was just the dance task that essentially put them back. Essentially, all the teams that finished in the back of the pack this leg, I think basically everyone who finished this leg, it was determined by one thing, either the detour or the roadblock. For them, it was, they were just so bad at the detour, a Rex Ryan number of tries. It was like 8 attempts at this dancing. And then they end up catching up with everybody, but by then it was just too late, where despite all the work that Glenda was putting in, she wasn't able to make up for it. So it really was, I think, much like we saw with Linton and Sharik last week, right, where they were sort of cooked by the time the roadblock ended. That's what's kind of the case with Glenda and Lumumba on the detour.
Glenda and Lumumba, though, they are such relationship goals. Like, I am so happy for the two of them that they have found each other, Lumumba is very excited to have the opportunity to get to flirt with his wife in this dance. This is, you know, I'm very inspired always by Glenda and Lumumba.
I love his pep talk. Mm-hmm. I think we have to.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not just relationship goals. Like, they're not just relationship goals. I think he is husband goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, I really want to highlight that as well. Right. Where like she feels like she's letting him down. He pulls her aside and says specifically, I don't want you to think this is a failure because you're struggling at it. And I really appreciate that because like you can very much get in your head, especially when you're in this status, right, where everyone has passed you by, of like, I'm having problems with it, therefore I'm already jumping to the conclusion that I'm failing. As opposed to, it may take a longer time. I believe Lumumba is, I want to say he's like a assistant principal or something. So I do feel like he has the ability to guide young minds. Not to say Glenda is necessarily, but I think he's able to motivate, perhaps, in a way that Phil would be jealous of.
Okay. Lumumba is actually a middle school teacher.
Oh, a teacher. Okay, there we go. He's doing the stand and deliver of it all.
Yeah. I think, does he also come over and asks if he can give Glenda a hug also right before that as well?
Yeah, I like the asking permission because sometimes that's not what you want in the moment.
Yeah, I have been there where I am offering a hug and I'm told get away from me right now.
No, Lumumba's very courteous. He says, Glenda, just so you know, maybe you should just put on more of a positive attitude. You're looking like Phil when he greets David and Aubrey at the pit stop right now.
Yeah. Okay.
You're going to fail this task for not being enthusiastic enough. You need to make more eye contact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to feel the connection between you and the cart.
What's their strong suit? What do we need to show up next week for Glenda and Lumumba to get back in this thing?
I think we need a task where they can work together successfully on something.
You know what? That I think that Glenda aced yodeling on the first time through. And I feel like that one of the earlier dance tasks, I feel like they did particularly well at. So
They did like the German, like
this knee slapping dance.
Yeah, the knee slapping dance, which I think was. They were fine enough at it. They got off to an earlier lead because of what Glenda did. But it's interesting, right? Because this dance did not work out well for them. So it's not like music is always going to be what they're good at in particular. I just think it's for them, it's maybe navigation as well. It's like they need to get off to an early lead. So therefore, if they struggle at any task, they'll at least be brought down to like where everyone else is, as opposed to them getting lost and being dragged down to the bottom where they already were.
Okay. All right, so we'll keep our fingers crossed for Glenda and Lumumba to bounce back. Okay. Sixth place this week, really sort of tied for fifth and sixth place. Two teams that had been at the top of the pack for most of the Amazing Race 34. Michael and Marcus are five. Emily and Molly are six. How much is, I believe it's Emily's injury, right? How much is that holding them back at this point?
Well, it's interesting because you said that, like, oh, they've been front runners for most of the race. They were front runners for most of this leg. Mm-hmm. They left the detour in first and second place. Literally, it was getting lost on the way to the roadblock and then just failing at the roadblock proper. To answer your question, I don't think Emily and Molly finish as far in the back as they do without her injury, because Molly ends up taking the roadblock, right? Because Emily is injured. But remember, Emily was the one that kicked so much ace at that Ducati roadblock that she would have, as Louise talked about, right? Like, she would have looked at it and it would have assembled itself. So I think that because they unfortunately did not put their best player into the roadblock they were suited for, that put them in the back of the pack. So it ends up sort of like second-handedly contributing to them not doing so well. I don't know if it'll be like we have to get eliminated because we fell behind because of this. I think it'll more so be we have to choose this task because we're physically impaired, and that might end up leading to them getting eliminated or finishing more towards the back of the pack.
Okay. Just, we don't think that there's any sort of danger, though, that this injury is going to get worse where we have a Dave and Connor situation, do we?
No, not a chance. That's like the one time there's been any kind of a medevac in Amazing Race US history. And you always hear, like, after the race, how many times have we talked to a team that's been like, oh yeah, the whole time we were running, like, I was running on two broken legs and I had stress fractures. Mm-hmm. I had plantar fasciitis. I had, you know, I had gaping open wounds the whole time. God. And I ran even though I was injured. How many times has a team told us that? Like, I think you can get pretty far on an injury, even if it's maybe slows you down a little bit. I think more likely the injury might cause them to be eliminated before we would like them to be. Mm-hmm. But there's no way that, you know, Phil comes in with the medical team and is like, I'm sorry, you can't continue on this pulled muscle.
Yeah.
Emily, your quad, it's too pulled. We must remove you. Your quad has tested positive for COVID.
Oh, my God.
Just the quad.
Yeah. Another interesting thing with Emily and Molly that it didn't seem like this helped them, but they both talked about how that the alphabet that they were trying to learn, the Arabic alphabet, that there were some similarities to the Hebrew alphabet. And I think that's such an interesting part of their backstory, that they're both adopted by Jewish families and both ended up learning Hebrew. Again, it's just this separated at birth story is just wilder and wilder.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. And I do think it did play at least a bit of a role in them doing the roadblock, because you see people like Marcus and Derek, who I don't want to make assumptions, but like you can see a goy from a mile away. And I feel like both of those guys have partaken in ham, if you catch my drift, in the past. And so I would imagine that, like, Emily and Molly have, it's producing those
description,
like,
ham
sounds.
Season. Yeah,
exactly. From they produce those throat sounds, right? Like, they've been able to do the chuz just from reading Hebrew. And so I think the pronunciations made it a lot easier. I mean, as we get to Michael and Marcus, I'll give them credit for essentially being able to sidestep that and being able to circumvent that type of thing. But they seem to be one of the only teams, right? Because it was 3 and 4 that did it. They were the only team, I believe, to like really master doing it together, as opposed to Marcus and Michael, who split it off, and Derek and Claire, who like kind of limped their way through it at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Marcus and Michael a little bit here. Of course, they're struggling with the alphabet. They ultimately divide and conquer to get their way through it. Anything else from Marcus and Michael on these letter by letter?
They had kind of a quiet week, I feel like.
Yeah.
But that was so smart. I'm so surprised. Not to like shame Derek and Claire, but they're the ones that have always been think smarter, not harder. That was a textbook think smarter, not harder thing, right? This is like genie rules. Well, it doesn't say that we both have to say all the letters. Let's just divide them up. I just thought that was a really great way to think outside the box in terms of working your way around a problem.
They have a lot of these problems on Amazing Race Canada, and they almost always split them up. Like, everybody does it, to the point where I didn't even think of that as being a think smarter task, because I'm just like, of course you would do it that way.
Mm-hmm. So,
but, yeah.
Yeah. Then we had to assemble the cart, and it was a return to form of, you know, one of my favorite runners from this season, where Michael is doing the detour and Marcus is standing by watching the struggle.
Yeah, it's definitely an older brother, younger brother thing, right? Where he's just like, come on, make it happen.
But why do we keep putting Michael in this spot? I feel like that he has not excelled in this spot. I kind of feel like, isn't it Marcus's turn to take a crack at this?
No. I thought Marcus was the one who did the Ducati.
Maybe. I mean, I'm getting confused with when they were working on the yodeling.
Yeah, I know that Michael did the yodeling, right? That was Marcus's infamous, you've got to make love to the mountains or whatever he said. Yeah, so that's definitely an example, right? Of maybe it was also a thing of, for whatever reason, some teams were able to kind of, for lack of a better term, put together like, okay, this roadblock may involve putting something together. Let's try to put the same person on the Ducati as was on this, because they probably have the same set of skills, or in Claire's case, able to get some form of redemption. But for whatever reason, with Marcus and Michael, yeah, Marcus is usually the handier of the two. He talked about that in the Ducati mission. It was also, I think, Michael, this is something I don't think I've ever mentioned before, and I thought would be a problem. Too much attention to detail, according to Michael, right? This idea of like, he put two nails in where every time there should be only one. And because he did that, that slowed him down so much. I think he thought that it would have to be like a pitch perfect wagon in comparison to the sample. Turns out they were a bit more lenient on the judging. I'm sure it was the sturdiest wagon that you could take to the pit stop, but that didn't matter when you fell all the way down to fifth place.
Yeah, well, that's a gamble you always have to take on these tasks. You don't know. The judging is so subjective that it's really hard to say whether you're going to need to have every nail in exactly the right place with exactly the right number of nails, or whether it just has to be the same shape roughly.
Yeah.
You never know. Yeah, the wrong side of the gamble.
Yeah, and this is one where the judging was very lenient, where, you know, that basically the guy gave it a once over and then your whole thing could fall apart on the way to the mat.
He's like, yeah, good luck. Here you go.
Go for it. Okay. All right. So Michael and Marcus, Emily and Molly, down week for them. Then Derek and Claire, they had some struggles this week for sure, but end up sort of middle of the pack here and are the fourth team to check in. We talked about Derek X's struggles here with his rolling his R's. It seemed like that they paired up on this leg with David and Aubrey.
Yeah, at least for a little bit, right? Until they split off to do the detours, which was interesting, right? That Aubrey and David are like, we're doing dance. And Claire and Derek are like, we're not. So again, it's when it comes to working with teams, it seems like we are definitely straying away from the mind five of it all and more so towards a, hey, if you're around in my proximity, do you want to work together? And even in that case, that might not happen. I brought up to Abby and Will in our exit interview about the whole thing from a couple weeks back, right, of them saying we want to run our own race. And they said they certainly weren't against it. It was just in that moment, they had the directions and were confident that they didn't necessarily need to wait for anybody else. I think nowadays, the conventionalities of working with teams on The Amazing Race is like, is it advantageous to me in this moment? Sure, but let's not pursue something formal. Let's F around. We don't need to commit to anything at the moment.
Okay. Let's F around and find out. Okay. So we get to putting together the cart. And again, it's going to be Claire who is going to work on doing this. There's some questions for Derek X. Like, Derek X, really? You're having Claire put together the thing again? He said, hey, this race is all about redemption.
Yeah, and also
redemption.
I saw in the roadblock prompt that I had to roll the cart, and I just like had to stay away from that.
Yes, so problem with rolling my carts. Yeah.
So I thought I misread. I thought it said rolling your R's, and I said, "Well, look at this. Look what happened to happen." Okay, yeah. Claire, you're gonna take Claire of it.
It was a capital R. Yeah.
You're gonna take Claire of it, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, take Claire of it.
Yeah. Okay. So Claire gives it her all, even though it's not her strong suit. I think she builds software, not carts. that Claire is getting frustrated. There was one moment that this made me laugh, the way that Claire said this.
This, that's how you use pliers, I think.
Why did she say it like that?
Troyzan probably taught her how to use pliers.
That's how you use pliers.
Well, that's how you use pliers. Mm-hmm. I like to imagine it's like maybe an inside joke between the two of them of like doing a jokey voice. And so that's Claire just being like, yeah, I finally did it.
Mm-hmm. I love it. So, yeah, Claire and Derek X, they do finally get through this. It seems like it wasn't quite as much of an ordeal as putting together the Ducati.
Not quite, but where did she get the grease from? Like that was a funny observation. Like nobody else has grease on their face. Where did she get grease on her face? Is this a greasy task?
Mm-hmm. I dressed up for it. I'm a grease monkey now.
That's how you use grease.
Call me Danny Zuko.
Yeah. So, Derek X and Claire, fun week for them.
Can I also just say, with no offense to the teams, like, look, I know that there's a lot of discourse, especially amongst tried and true Amazing Race fans, of like, get like no other reality TV people, don't bring on the celebrities. For what it's worth, surprise, surprise, the people that were cast on other reality shows for being entertaining are being really entertaining on another reality show. I feel like far and away, this is the most entertaining team of the season.
Mm-hmm. It blows my mind. We almost didn't get Claire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at the wild series of sliding doors there, right?
Talk about like, the butterfly effect.
Were it not for a positive COVID test.
Oh, the COVID circle giveth, of life. Yes.
COVID giveth and COVID, take, mm-hmm. COVID taketh away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I like that. I like that, Mike.
Yeah. It could have been like when they heard a positive COVID test, Claire's like, uh-oh, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Karma's finally reckoning.
Final destination.
Now that's how you do a COVID test.
Needle nose pliers for up the nose swab.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So third place, Quinn and Maddie, who have run and also a quiet leg this week, kind of a quiet but very capable race. And, you know, their tag team duo that they are with, they spend a lot of time with Luis and Michelle. And so here they are, third place.
I'm convinced they're holograms at mm-hmm. this point. Like, they were hired by the LA Rams as holograms because they have this thing where they'll appear. The Holo Rams is right there. Well, they'll appear someplace in, like, third place. Then they'll disappear. And then all of a sudden, they're in seventh place. Where this happened last week, right? And I guess we found out through a bunch of Amazing Race podcasts done by racers on this season that, like, I guess Quinton and Maddie, they just had bad luck with their driver, where their driver had gotten lost. And so mm-hmm. they fell, like, all the way down to seventh place. This week, they show up, you know, they end up finding the pit stop ahead of time, along with Luis and Michelle, which is very fun, very rarely seen, but always fun. And you think, like, okay, they're just going to get it in one time like we got with, you know, the dance when they ended up catching up during the second leg. And they do get it in one try. But for some reason, they leave so much after Luis and Michelle and David and Aubrey did. I thought they would be one of the first to leave because they're both dancers. Like, I am really surprised they left second to last after all of this. Now, they did get it in one try, and Quinton was somehow able to make up so much time on the roadblock to pass mm-hmm. and end up in third place.
Well, he was moving things with his feet.
But this is such an enigmatic team for me. We're like, we'll look away from them, and then we look back, and all of a sudden they fall in like five places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the show does not know how to edit their journey.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like it's like those episodes of Amazing Race where they cut out a task and then people finish in an order that makes no sense whatsoever, mm-hmm. but the show won't explain it. It's like Quinton and Maddie are just that all the time.
Well, Jess, you have talked about this, about how this is a very rare team of, okay, Quinton and Maddie, platonic friends, a man and a woman. And could it be as simple as the race doesn't know how to show us this team?
It could be that simple. Like,
where's your chemistry? Where's the eye contact?
Yeah, they're they're not fighting with each other. There's not stakes as if, you know, there's not a family bond to be tested. There's not a romantic relationship that might end because of the race. They're getting along fine as friends.
Yeah.
I think friends is kind of it's a relationship the Amazing Race doesn't like. If you're friends, you have to be something else and friends. Like, they are cheerleaders and friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You gotta have a gimmick. And it turns out that they cast too many people that can dance on this season. So they're not they're not the usual cheerleading friends team.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, they're doing great. Third place for Quinn and Maddie. Second place this week, it's Aubrey and David. We talked about that Aubrey wanted to like seeing this bigger reaction from Phil, likes to see Phil smiling. And ultimately, they're going to go to Step by Step and learn the dance. They don't necessarily ace it, right? They have some struggles.
I mean, Louisa, Michelle, and Aubrey and David, it both took them both, I think, two tries. It was just like, oh, they messed up the first time. They adjusted. I think Aubrey and David did. I mean, if we're talking about like Glenn and Lumumba, what did they have to do to catch up? No offense to Aubrey and David, but they got the perfect leg, did they not? Like, you have a dance teacher and a helicopter pilot, and the two tasks were dancing and putting something together using tools. Like, this was their leg, far and away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so they get through that. They put together the cart. And also, it seemed like that, Jess, I thought that maybe this might have been a five-hall task for David, who looked like he was having some struggles with the cart.
I mean, it was overblown. He ended up doing okay. Mm-hmm. I think you have to really, like, in order to get into five-hole territory, it's got to be, like, jeopardizing your ability to continue racing. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This was not.
Yeah, they put together the cart. They limp in and then tell Phil that he needs to give them bigger reactions when they show up.
I'm so excited for next week. Like, Aubrey and David, look what the cart dragged in.
Yeah. Now, is that if they finish like high or they finish very low on the race?
Or he could go super neutral, not give any reaction whatsoever, just to make sure he's unreadable.
Yeah. He does that sometimes. Like, so what place do you think you're in? Like, and then like he shames them into saying like, I don't know, like eighth.
No, you're in third.
Yes.
Stop underselling yourselves.
Believe in yourself. The pit stop greeter should be like the Price is Right audience and be like, higher, higher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then finally, Louisa and Michelle, who complete their set, you know, kind of very quietly, have emerged here with back-to-back first place finishes.
Yeah, they're the team that has won the most so far in terms of legs. It's definitely surprising. And definitely emerging as personalities, in particular Louise, he is definitely becoming like the mugger of the season, right? The guy who is like a big goofball to the cameras, which is really fun. And yeah,
what is that a reference? Oh, that he's mugging to the camera?
Yeah, like he's not taking money from anybody.
Yeah, I was like, is mugger a character on a show?
Yeah, it's Jerry, George, Elaine, and Mugger, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I mean, he has a little bit of like that Kramer-esque goofiness to him. But I think that what really ended up working out well for them is they were, you know, did pretty well on the dance test, but I think they still left in like fourth place. For whatever reason, all the other teams ahead of them got lost going to this park, and they somehow wound up as the first team to get there. Mm-hmm. And that was what really put them forward. So again, like I really compliment them on what they were able to pull up. I'm still not entirely sure how it happened. In particular, whether it was like their own prowess or just the detriment of others. But I can't, talk too badly about a team that has two first place finishes in a row here on The Amazing Race.
I think I'm going to put forward that I think we are underestimating the importance of accidentally running across the pit stop.
Oh, yes.
Before anybody is even there. Like, the mat is just there and it's empty. It's like they just left the mat there for no reason.
Yes.
Now, and then they're like, oh, but we know where the pit stop is, so.
Jess, does that speak to something that we've talked about this season of, like, are all the tasks just, like, all in the same place? And then, so is that a big advantage to just know where you're getting back to?
I think that's a huge advantage to know where you're getting back to. And I think all the tasks are probably fairly close together. I didn't look at a map for this one.
Last season where Lulu and Lala, remember they went to the mat before they finished the tasks? So this might be a thing where, like, basically, like, all the Amazing Race stuff is happening within, like, a quarter mile area.
It's interesting because, especially when you have these legs that take place within one city, I think it does make more sense. Plus, like, how many, with no offense to Amon Jordan here, like, how many landmarks are there that would make it deeming of a pit stop in the first place? So, like, if you're like, oh, let me go to these ruins. Oh, the ruins over here, that's the pit stop? No, the ruins over here, that's the detour. I feel like you could, if you really wanted to big brain this, like, scout out some possible locations if you know you're racing just within a city for the leg and be like, okay, these are the places that we probably need to go to. And chances are at least one of them is going to be a pit stop.
I mean, I think that was something, that is something I've always thought you should be doing. Like, you know, you've got your airport time and you can go and like use the internet kiosks back in the old days of the Amazing Race. Like, that would be the thing, is just look up what are the major attractions, because odds are you're going to end up being at one or more of them. Mm-hmm. And even just looking at the map a little bit to get a sense of how it's laid out could be very useful in the end.
Mm-hmm. Luis and Michelle, they also get their cart done first. Kind of falls apart on them. They did rebuild it. So I don't know if they like told them, hey, make sure you take your tools with you to go in case you have any problems. But Luis and Michelle are able to fix it up. They finish in first place. I like the little thing they did back to back. They stood back to back when they got it. Yeah.
It's like they were posing for their Amazing Race intro shots.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So it was step by step, letter by letter, and back to back for Luis and Michelle this week. And also, they are going to be the owners, the proud owners of some Expedia points. Big time. Okay. Enough Expedia points to get the two of them to Barcelona.
You don't roll that R though.
No.
Is that like they stop you at customs? Like, can you pronounce the name of this city, please? Authentically.
Mm-hmm.
Barcelona.
Yes.
There you go. Come on in.
Yes. All right. So congratulations to Lisa and Michelle, winners of this leg of the Amazing Race. And the teams are about to pack up, get back on the Amazing Race plane, and head off to back to France.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would imagine planning out this season was a bit of a matter of, okay, where do we know we can go? Like, let's step outside the box a bit and go to Jordan for many reasons, bit of a change in scenery. But like, we know we can rely on France. France, we've got a good reputation with this new era of Amazing Race. We're fine going back there. I'm assuming we're not going to repeat any of the same stuff from last season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, seems like this is not maybe the most fuel efficient way to have planned out this route, Jess.
Well, the Amazing Race has never been exactly a green show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's a red and yellow show.
You're going to have to buy some carbon offsets at the end every year.
Maybe that's what they do. Enough. Your win is you win enough Expedia points for carbon offsets for all of the legs we traveled.
Yep, that's your prize, which is basically you don't get anything, but we get something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the roadblock every leg is like, build this windmill so that we can make up the green energy that we've spent with all the emissions.
Wow, that would be something. Maybe that's where Amazing Race ultimately ends up getting to, but not yet here in Amazing Race 34. Any other thoughts on this week's edition of the Amazing Race 34?
I want to highlight Phil's pronunciation of the word rickshaw.
Yes.
Yes, rickshaw.
That was a highlight for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that something that Phil normally would not make that mistake?
No, I think that's just Phil's New Zealand coming through.
Yeah, it's like how John Montgomery and Jonathan LaPaglia say the word buoy really weirdly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
I think it's just a regionalist thing, but still always fun to point out. Yeah, listen, Phil's been shamed enough this episode, okay? Let's not pile on.
Mm-hmm. But Mike, it's fun to laugh at people who are different.
That's the American way.
Okay. So, all right. Don't go anywhere. We still have our exit interview with Abby and Will coming up in this episode of the podcast. The teams will head to France, presumably, for the next two legs of the Amazing Race. And we'll have that for you coming up next week. Jess, what's coming up for you?
Well, what's coming up for me is there are only three episodes of The Walking Dead proper left.
God.
And we are in the home stretch, the panel of... Chappelle and AJ and Josh and I get together every week to talk about everything that happened on The Walking Dead over on Post Show Recaps. And that has been, you know, watching the show in a vacuum, probably not that fun. Watching it and then talking about it with those three, very, very fun. So I'm sure they, like, Walking Dead is never going to go away forever, but we're definitely going to be putting the series to bed in style.
You've earned this.
We've earned it.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. All right. Well, great job here once again, Jess. Mike, what's coming up for you?
The usual letters in my alphabet, if you will, when it comes to podcasts. As I mentioned before, did my exit interview with Abby and Will. Really enjoyed that. That's up actually at the time we're talking right now at Parade.com, where I also spoke with the person voted out in last night's Survivor episode. It was a big one. Very fun episode of Survivor and very fun boot and very fun interview, if I do say so myself. So you can check that out as well. Liana and I will be back with the B&B this weekend with Frail Mary, getting into everything from this quote-unquote merge episode of Survivor 43. And then the usual stuff on post-show recaps, doing Heroes with Josh and House of the Dragon finished its coverage this past week. And so Grace and I got together to recap the finale. Rob, I know you spoke with Josh as well. And I know that there are a lot of Iron Thrones in the fire, if you will, as to other things that may be happening in the long, interminable, winter-like off-season, at least for the next couple of weeks. I guess the last thing I'll say is I know that, Rob, you will be in D.C. next week for the Live Know-It-Alls. I know I will be as well. A bunch of RGP podcasters will. So if you're out there, come say hi. As long as, you know, you have a negative COVID test, unlike Abby and Will, we'll have a good time.
All right. Great job once again, Mike, of course, that we have plenty of Survivor coverage about this week's very fun Survivor episode. Plus, I talked about The Real Love Boat, another banger on CBS Reality Wednesday.
Literally?
Not quite. But that, you know, we talked about it all with Jenny Autumn and Kirsten McInnes on The Real Love Boat recap on Rob's podcast. Not to mention also Jess and I and the Mole Patrol podcast recapped the last couple episodes of The Mole on Netflix. And we hope to bring you some more Mole interviews coming up this weekend here on Robert's podcast. Stay tuned for that. Speaking of interviews, we've got our exit interview coming up with Abby and Will. Just let me say that I very mistakenly was running late for the start of this exit interview. Jess had to that. So like I totally screwed it up. Jess had to get this Amazing Race exit interview started. And I will pop in along the way. Okay.
So yeah, I will say, as soon as Rob pops in, like, Abby and Will just light up.
Yeah.
Like, oh, thank God. Mm-hmm.
And we'll also have that video posted for you on our YouTube channel as well. Thank you so much for joining us. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
So Abby and Will, I'm so sad to see you get eliminated in such a terrible way. How are you reacting to everything?
I think it has been up and down. Like, the whole first part of the season, so exciting. Last night, frankly, the second episode comes on, I just burst into tears. Like, I thought that I'd come to peace with, like, come to terms with it, and it just hits you like a ton of bricks. So I think on and off moments.
Yeah, I would agree. It's like Abby said, it's been so exciting to watch everything, but you know this moment's coming.
Yeah.
And when it hit last night, I don't think there was really a way to prepare for it. Because when you actually see yourself get eliminated that way and you see us sitting in the hotel room separate, it kind of brings back all those kind of tough, hard feelings that we went through then. So definitely a crushing way to go home.
But still grateful for the experience.
Yeah.
Of course. Of course, your positivity, I think, was something that I think stuck to a lot of people, especially as longtime fans. Can you talk a little bit about your love of The Amazing Race and how it got you onto the show?
Oh, I love The Amazing Race. We love The Amazing Race. Like, it's just so part of, like, our lives. We watch like every season of the show for the last, I don't know, 15 years, 20 years. But I think it was just a dream come true. Like, I don't know how you can't be just like, so excited the whole time you're on it. It's such a dream.
It really was. I mean, since sitting on a couch in Abby's house when we were 16 years old, whatever it was, like, planning our strategy, what we'd do, to actually get there and be able to do it. It's absolutely surreal. And you could see it every single time they showed Abby, because we might not have gotten a lot of time, but every time we did it, Abby was screaming with excitement just about.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, I think, want to live vicariously through you when you're that excited about it. So I would imagine it lived up to expectations.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was to get there and like really experience it, be in the middle of it. It was very overwhelming, incredibly overwhelming, incredibly stress inducing, but also one of the coolest, the coolest experience we've ever had.
But like, okay, all of my stress was leading up to that moment. Also, hey, Rob, I feel like we should.
Hi, Abby Wells.
Nice to meet you. But all my stress was leading up to it, because like the second we get that call that there's a chance, my hopes are up there. And so until it was confirmed, I was just like, okay, try and keep the hopes like bearable, so that if it doesn't happen, I'm not just crushed. And so by the time we got on there, I think I was just like ready to go. And that's when his set in. So we kind of did this balancing act of like, he became really anxious and I kind of calmed down and got excited. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, Abby's strategy for everything, whether it was a challenge, whether it's real life, is like, go ahead and face it immediately and go through all the stress. And I'm like, it's not here yet. I'll worry about the stress down the road. But when you all of a sudden get on the race and you're sitting there at the starting line, you're like, oh, there's no pushing this down the road. I gotta come to terms with this now.
But a dream, every expectation was met, yeah. Except winning.
You know? Yeah, that one was cut short.
Well, it really seemed like you two were starting to heat up at the time that you got eliminated from the race. That had you made an adjustment to do something different?
I think for us, it was a big, like we were saying, I was just so overwhelmed. Abby was so overwhelmed. There's a ton of stress when you start. And as like that super fan side, it was like, just don't go home. We just want to experience more of this. And so when we started to get past in that third leg, when we could finally start moving past how overwhelmed and stressed and kind of panicked we were, and just be like, we're here. Let's freaking make the most of it. Let's enjoy it. And let's try to kick some butt. That's when we settled. It started to settle in a little bit.
Yeah, you almost have to get past that like super fan point of like the first 2-3 legs. It's all just like, oh my gosh, we're here. We're here. We're here. I don't want to leave. And then all of a sudden, like, I mean, we both grew up playing sports. So like super competitive, like love competition. So I think once that kind of settled of like, okay, we're on the race, but we're also in a competition. And that mindset was starting to kind of flick on, and just the like chaos of, I can't believe we're here, was settling it.
So what's the biggest surprise that you, like, you clearly knew the show very well, you knew the competitive elements. What was the biggest thing that surprised you about being on the race as opposed to watching it?
All the strategy goes out the window immediately. I mean, I will say it until I'm blue in the face. The one strategy that would have been so easy to stick to is, we do not dance. And what do we do? Or I do. Yeah. The second we get the option to dance, I'm like, Will, we can do this. I don't know why. I mean, luckily it didn't send us home, but like every strategy we talked about, I feel like I forgot.
Yeah, it's just out the door. I think for me, it's the level of stress and like how much adrenaline is pumping through your body the whole time. It like, it sets your brain just haywire. And so I thought I'd be able to control myself a little bit better. I was totally out of whack.
Now, it seemed like at a certain point that you two also made a decision. Hey, we are going to run our own race. We're not going to run with the pack. What led up to you two feeling that was the way to go?
So that, like, when we were in Italy running that piece of the leg, we were kind of building confidence. I don't know why I'd screwed up Ducati, but we were still alive and we had gotten lucky. So we were like, okay, Abby just did great sculpting the statue. And we had kind of figured out our directions a little bit better. So that's one point specifically. We were like, I think we can just do this. Like, let's just crank this out and let's make that jump. Let's take that big step. And fortunately, it worked out for us.
And I think, like, we are confident in ourselves. Like, we're both very physical. I like to think we both are pretty smart. And like at that point, he did have the directions figured out. So there wasn't like a strategy element to working with another team. If the strategy element presented itself that it made sense to work with another team, I wouldn't be opposed.
So what was your favorite moment? Do you have a one single favorite, or is it too hard to choose?
I think my favorite moment was watching Abby yodel in Austria. I think that scene was just absolutely incredible. Abby looked 100% the part of a little Austrian farmhand calling in the cows. And you also just to see how excited she is over there yodeling. She dives into everything 100%. And so when she's over there dancing, you can hear yodeling from across the field. I think that was my favorite moment.
And I mean, talk about an amazing race scene, right? Like, you've got the costume, you've got the beautiful view, you're doing something that you never in your life thought you would do. Like, I didn't have yodel in Austria up there on my bucket list, but man, am I glad I checked it off. So yeah, that was definitely my favorite moment too.
Were there any of the other teams that you got along with especially well?
We, you know, all the teams were fantastic. And like, it's kind of hard when you're running the leg because you don't have a ton of time to sit there and really get to know them. But like early on, we made good friends with Derek and Claire. We just got to talk to them a little bit and realized we had similarities, and they're great. Lewis and Michelle were fantastic. And especially watching back that last episode, it's so hard to watch. Like, they especially showed them call us out and just love us. And that means so much watching it back. That was a hard episode to watch. And just knowing that love is still getting put out there was huge for us.
So do you think if you got a second chance, I think I know the answer to this question, but if you got a second chance to do it again, would you?
I'm like, CBS, call me in 1 minute and I will pack my bag and I will be on a plane.
I mean, if there's ever another unfinished business season, I think the two of you would be certain contenders for that.
We sure hope so. I mean, because to your earlier point, it did feel like we were kind of gaining our legs and like, we were trending in the right direction. I felt like we were figuring it out, and it just stinks that we never got a chance to peak. And it's hard, like even when somebody gets a bad cab driver or like something unfortunate does happen, there is kind of this element of maybe you can fight back from it, even sometimes with an injury. But I think what was so hard and what makes it feel so unfinished is there was no fighting back from it. Like there was no overcoming. It's like you were positive, that is it.
Yeah, that's all you can do.
So yeah, definitely we would do it again. I sure hope we could too.
Yeah, I hope you do as well. Will and Abby, this has been so nice to get to talk to you, and we wish you all the best. So thanks very much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.